Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today we're exploring a really powerful statement that has, well, it's broken out of the museum. You see it on t-shirts, social media, everywhere. The phrase is, the art is present. It's simple, it's direct, but what does it really mean when that statement isn't about some painting on a wall, but it's about you?
Well, that phrase is the absolute core of this conceptual art project from the Joplin Factory. They're an art community, and they're really dedicated to fundamentally shifting how we even think about art.
And they call this a momentum multiple.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And the whole mission for our deep dive today is to really grasp the philosophical flip that it represents. Because the shirt or, you know, the sticker, that's all secondary.
That's just the prompt.
It's just the prompt. The main idea, the assertion, is that the person wearing it or even just seeing it, that person is the artwork. They call it the Mensch an sich, the human in itself.
Okay.
So we're going to unpack why this whole project is demanding that you, the listener, stop seeing yourself as just a consumer of art and start seeing yourself as the masterpiece.
That's a huge starting point. And the title itself, it's such a clear nod to the art world. I mean, you can't hear it without thinking of Marina Abramovich's huge 2010 performance.
The artist is present.
Right. Tell us about that connection. How are they using that as a jumping off point?
It's a very deliberate and, I think, brilliant provocation. Abramovich's original piece, I mean, she sat silently for over 700 hours. It was an intense exploration of the physical, the emotional presence of the artist.
Her as an individual.
Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm. The focus was all on her vulnerability, her endurance, and that that energy exchange between her and whoever was sitting across from her. She was the artist present, demanding your focus.
It kind of cemented that idea of the heroic singular artist as the center of the universe.
It did. And so the Joplin Factory, they take that intense focus and they perform this foundational turn. They ask a simple question. If the artist can be present, why can't the art itself be present?
And not in an object.
But in every single human being. It completely dissolves that hierarchy between the creator and the viewer. Their core claim, in their words, is überall dort, wo ein Mensch ist, ist die Kunst bereits anwesend.
So, wherever a human is, the art is already present.
It's already there. You don't have to go looking for it.
So this is moving way beyond just performance art. It feels like it's grounding itself in some pretty heavy conceptual philosophy. I'm thinking Joseph Beuys. He feels like the anchor here, right?
Yeah, absolutely. The whole concept is, it's basically unintelligible without Beuys and his extended art concept. Mm. Beuys always insisted that creativity wasn't just for, you know, painting or sculpture.
Right.
He argued that ultimately the human being,
you,
should become the artwork. You should function as this living shaping force. You call it the sociale plastic.
The social sculpture. So you're not just making the sculpture. You are the sculpture constantly being formed and in turn shaping the society around you.
Precisely. And the Joplin Factory takes that idea and just pushes it to its most, I think, inescapable conclusion. Their big declaration is, jeder Mensch ist Kunst. Du bist Kunst.
Every person is art. You are art.
And then they add Joseph Beuys and the impossibility of man not to be art. So they're arguing that you can't opt out.
You can't escape it.
Nope. Even if you try to live this perfectly beige, predictable life, the constellation of your choices, your genetics, it still makes you a totally unique, non-reproducible work of art.
That idea, the impossibility of not being art, it's liberating, but it's also maybe a little intimidating. If we accept that premise, we have to look closer at this term you mentioned, the Mensch an sich. It sounds so elevated, you know, like some kind of idealized perfect state.
And it is so vital that we throw that idealization out the window. The Mensch an sich is explicitly defined as not the flawless or successful human. Not at all. It is the real contradictory person who exists right here, right now. The art is present in your confusion, in your mistakes, in your unfinished thoughts. It's just unavoidable.
So if the art is defined by all that messiness, what are the, say, three core practical takeaways for a person who decides to actually internalize this idea?
Okay, so first is just the recognition that it is impossible not to be art. We just covered that. It's your inherent state, not something you have to earn.
Right, it's not an achievement.
Not an achievement. Second is recognizing your own uniqueness. Each person is this non-reproducible mix of experiences, genetics, relationships. I mean, if a painting is considered unique, how much more so is a human being?
Infinitely more.
And third is the recognition that this whole constellation is never, ever finished. And it's always formable, always dynamic. It's a perpetually shifting work in progress.
That last point, the work in progress. That really shifts the focus from achieving some impossible standard to just embracing the process of living. So, okay, we need to get specific. How does the Jobelin Factory actually categorize this human artwork?
They distill it down into three core aesthetic categories. And this is where the concept moves from this, like, abstract philosophy to something you can actually observe in yourself and in other people.
Let's start with the most obvious canvas, then, the physical body.
That's category one, the body as sculpture in time. So the body isn't just a container or a shell. It's framed as a sculpture that's constantly being shaped by time and by motion. Think about the physical traces of your life.
You mean like wrinkles, scars, the way you carry yourself?
Exactly. Those are viewed as traces of lived experience. They're like topographical evidence of your history. In a culture that's totally obsessed with anti-aging, this project asks you to see those markers not as flaws,
but as essential material.
Yes. As part of the sculpture, they are evidence of the struggle, of healing, of the choices you've made. And beyond that, your daily movements, your walk, your gestures, the way you lean in when you talk, they're all seen as choreographic mini performances.
So my terrible posture on a Tuesday morning isn't a personal failing. It's just a specific phase in my long-running performance piece. Maybe the slouching toward deadline period.
Precisely. You are constantly on exhibit. And yeah, sure, clothing is part of the exhibition, but the sources really emphasize that the essential artwork is the raw sculpture underneath, defined by how it interacts with time.
So if the body is the sculpture, then the second category must be about consciousness, memory. How do they frame our life story?
That brings us right to category two, biography as narrative art. Every single life story is seen as this continuous, unfolding narrative work. Everything that happens. Your career detours, the unexpected moves, the decisions that felt right but, you know, went sideways.
Yeah.
Those were all dramaturgical turning points in your manuscript.
And what about the people in our lives?
The relationships, the conflicts, the reconciliations, those are the complex dialogue scenes that give the whole story its depth and its tension. But the important thing here is that your biography isn't a closed book that you just read passively.
It's an open manuscript.
It's an open manuscript, and you're still writing it. It's got breaks and gaps and whole open chapters where the action is still to be determined by you, the author.
That's a powerful way to think about intentionality. You know, what choices am I making today that are going to look compelling in the manuscript 10 years from now? But that leads us straight into the messiness of it all. No great story is without failure.
And that takes us to the third and maybe the most liberating category of all. Failure as aesthetic category.
Okay, this is where I feel like I have to push back just a little. I mean, it sounds incredibly freeing, right? Giving us permission to fail. But doesn't framing profound human struggle or mistakes that genuinely hurt people as just aesthetic, doesn't that risk trivializing real pain? Are we just turning agony into a cool museum label?
That is the essential, critical question. And the concept isn't advocating for trivializing pain. Not at all. It's arguing for a shift in perception after the fact. Think about it. Art is allowed to fail. A painting can miss the mark or irritate the viewer, and we don't just destroy it or call it worthless. So, applied to a person, mistakes aren't flaws that disqualify you from being art. Instead, they're visible traces of a search process. They prove you were actually trying to form something new.
So those inevitable embarrassing moments, the things that make you cringe late at night, they're just performative elements you can't edit out.
They become performative disturbances. They're integral parts of the total composition, not blemishes. And if you look at the major breaks in a life, a health crisis, getting laid off, a relationship imploding, those aren't defects. They're seen as radical new assemblies.
Radical new assemblies.
They force structural change in the sculpture. The artistic value is in the visibility of that struggle and the resilience, not in achieving some kind of effortless perfection.
That is a profound way to reframe self-criticism. Okay, so if the human is the artwork, then we have to talk about the memento multiples, the shirts, the logos. If I'm the masterpiece, why do I need the merchandise?
The object serves two critical intertwined functions. First is the memento function. Memento, of course, means remembrance. The object is just a quick stop sign in the stream of your daily habit.
Okay.
For the person wearing it, it's a constant reminder that you are art, even when you're, I don't know, commuting or waiting for a meeting to start. And for others, it's a reminder that the person they're about to interact with is an independent artwork.
It's a cognitive disruptor. It forces you to see the person first, not just their role.
Exactly. It's an attack on the idea of the function striker, the functionary. When you're just seen as the person who processes invoices or the cashier at the store, you're reduced to your function. The memento multiple disrupts that. It asserts, hey, look closer. This is an artwork, not just a service provider.
And the second part, the multiple.
The multiple, or Verfielfältigung, is all about mass reproduction. High editions of shirts, posters, digital avatars, stickers. This strategy intentionally breaks down the idea of the precious, single, unattainable museum piece.
It democratizes it.
Completely. Art is something to be worn, to be gifted, to be shared. It refuses to be locked up behind velvet ropes.
So if the shirt leaves the museum, where does the art actually happen? Where is the gallery for this?
The white cube, the formal museum space. That is explicitly just the starting point, not the end point. The real performance begins the second that memento multiple leaves the cultural space.
Meaning every everyday space becomes the exhibition room.
The office, the train, the coffee line.
The supermarket.
The market, the schoolyard, a family dinner. The Jobelin factory gives this one fantastic specific scenario. The art suddenly stands in front of the refrigerated shelf. That momentary shift in your perception, where your attention is pulled away from the advertising and the products and toward the complexity and humanity of the person next to you, that is the art happening in real time.
And what about the digital space, which so often just reduces us to data points and angry comments?
The digital space becomes a crucial exhibition room. When the phrase is used as a profile picture or a meme, it's a constant protest against that reduction. It's a reminder to everyone that behind every nickname, every comment, is a person. An artwork, not just an algorithm or a bot. It directly challenges the dehumanizing effect of being online all the time.
This all sounds playful, but the deeper implications here are, well, they're intensely ethical. If we actually take this premise seriously, if we view every human as a unique, irreplaceable masterpiece, what does that demand of us?
It forces us to ask some really tough questions about protection and appreciation. I mean, we treat masterpieces, a Rembrandt, a Rodin, with such reverence.
Climate-controlled rooms, security glass.
Massive insurance policies.
Yeah.
If a person is an irreplaceable, non-reproducible artwork, shouldn't they demand a much higher standard of care from all of us?
So how does this concept then apply to real-world toxicity, to social conflict?
Well, they offered the classroom scenario to make the point. The motto challenges us directly. If someone is art, isn't mobbing then also a type of art destruction? And that doesn't just apply to schools. It applies to the toxicity we see in workplaces, on social media, even inside families. The concept frames malicious behavior as an act of genuine damage against a unique creation.
And what about the relentless focus on productivity in modern life? How does it critique that?
In a professional setting, the phrase becomes this quiet but persistent critique, a critique against reducing a human being solely to their productivity, to their output. It reframes your colleagues not as tools for corporate metrics, but as dynamic, non-finalizable works that you're temporarily invited to interact with.
Like a curator for a day.
Exactly. It demands that the system acknowledges a person's intrinsic aesthetic value, not just their economic function.
And this all leads to a concept they call Kunstrechte, art rights.
Yes. This is the big philosophical challenge they pose to society. If a person's art being were truly taken seriously, what new art rights would they need to have? We have human rights. This invites us to think about human dignity through an aesthetic lens.
So like the right to a radical new assembly, the right to restart your narrative.
Perhaps that's a fundamental art right, or the right to be protected in your uniqueness, even if that uniqueness is currently exhibiting, you know, failure as aesthetic category. It challenges all of us to just elevate the level of care and curiosity we bring to every single human interaction.
This deep dive has really shown that the art is present is so much more than a trendy slogan. It's a profound philosophical framework designed to disrupt how you see yourself and everyone around you. You are not just a consumer or part of the picture. You are the picture. You are performing your art being in every moment with all your beautiful, contradictory flaws and potential. The shirt, the sticker, that's just the amplifier for the masterpiece that is you.
The ultimate condensation of the whole thought is just simple, direct, and applies to everyone. The art is present, weil du da bist. Simply because you're here.
The Jobelin Factory views this as an open series, and they invite participation from everyone. So this raises the final question for you, the listener. If your life is a work-in-progress manuscript, a biography as narrative art, and maybe you're currently exhibiting failure as aesthetic category, what title would be placed above the door for your current museum day? And what small, complex detail in you is so often overlooked but is absolutely central to the art being you're trying to express? Something to consider the next time you encounter yourself or another masterpiece.